I'm going to try to get some questions from the media. And as usual, please identify yourself. I can see the hand of the Spanish news agency, EFE. Down here, please, the microphone. Can we have the microphone down here? Thank you. Belén, you have the floor.
Yes. Hello, good morning. Regarding the slowdown of growth of food demand, I would like to ask you how this will affect the agricultural sector by region. Yes, the slowdown of food demand growth.
Let me briefly comment and then I'll ask José and our colleagues here. First of all, the reduction in demand is not the same in different parts. What we have had is a general slowdown in the world economy, but they are averages. The world economy is growing at 3%. Just to give you an idea, the world economy was growing at 4% before the crisis. So after 8 years after the crisis, we are still not growing at the level at which we were growing before the crisis. You know, it's just a very, very serious situation. We've had three dips, three rough patches. We're now coming out of one of them. It's looking a little better. But clearly what you have is several types of there are cultural issues that are in the most developed countries. There's some change in some of the nutritional patterns because of health issues and cultural region, cultural issues, etc. The second is that you have, as was mentioned by José, some satiation of what I would call the fundamental needs of relatively large segments of population, which now we have managed to reach more, but the needs, the fundamental needs, are satiated, so you will not have a demand of that. But then you have demand on things like protein, it means meat, poultry, etc. And where do you have the demand and where do you have the need? Well, José mentioned that trade was going to be more important in South, in sub-Saharan Africa. The reason this means, in other words, that's a question of self-sufficiency or not. That means they're going to have to be importing. That's fine. There's nothing, it's not bad that you have to import. The only question is that clearly that, well, that poses some constraints in terms of foreign exchange and other exports in order to be able to have the capacity to import. And also because the groups that need it are not always the same that have the availability of the foreign exchange. And last but not least, because with the average, let's say, if you think about a continuum where the people in China, where the people in emerging economies in general, where Latin America, Asia, are improving their lifestyle, are improving their purchasing power, clearly they go after you have so-called satiated your need for certain types, then you go for the protein, which are the ones we see that are continuing to grow. One of the things that was very interesting of what José mentioned is that you have fish growing, but in very interesting that the fish is coming out of aquaculture, not out of the, there has been a very now famous depletion of the oceans and, you know, overfishing and all this. But the fact that we are now producing most of this in the margin, the cover of this demand will be done by aquaculture, which is very important because it provides jobs and it provides opportunities, but also it means it is possible to actually do it. So you have a very, very differentiated, I would say, a very differentiated mosaic in terms of how the demand is going, but I would say more stable for the grains and more positive for the protein, which you...
Sure, yeah, maybe if I can just add on that. What we see from income growth in emerging economies is this tendency towards more consumption of protein livestock products. Now, if we have slower growth and slower catch-up in the emerging economies, that growth won't occur as quickly as we previously thought it might occur, but it will still occur. On Africa, there's a catch-up, but I think as was made in the Secretary-General and Director-General's remarks, and also Costas pointed out in his presentation, the catch-up in Africa, in a way it's taking place, but it's certainly not taking place quickly enough. So we see the rate of undernourishment falling from 23% to 19%. So there is progress. There is progress in Africa, but because of the rate of population growth, the overall numbers don't change so much. And with the overall numbers not changing so much and this catch-up in Asia, it means that more of the world's hungry are concentrated in Africa. The other aspect, I think, of the slowdown in growth and demand is that trade grows more slowly. So countries are importing less. The growth in imports is slower than we were thinking before, but the growth in exports is also slower than it was before. And so we've got trade over the next 10 years continuing to grow, for many countries becoming more important, but because of the slowdown, only growing at about half the rate that we had over the previous 10 years.
Just very briefly on this. First, there are two major facts. One is that the developing countries as a group, excluding sub-Saharan Africa, will approaching very fast the consumption, the calorie intake per capita of the developed countries. And actually, in some developing countries, I can't remember which one, has already gotten there. That's the first point. The second point is to look at the growth of different commodity groups. And there you will see in the outlook what you actually expect. Mm. Grain for direct consumption in the developed countries is marginally negative between now and 2025. And then the rest of the commodity groups, they grow very little because the developed countries are fairly satiated in terms of most of the food groups that they have, with the exception of possibly the strongest growth will be on dairy. If you look at the developing countries, you would expect slight growth on cereals because they are for direct consumption. And then as you go on, you see growth in meat, growth in sweeteners, a big growth in dairy and some of it in and strong growth in vegetable oils. So you have to differentiate according to the income group that they belong to at this point. But the idea is you get exactly what you would expect if you look at the projection. Now, sub-Saharan Africa, even in 2030, in 2025, they will have 20% of the consumption per capita than the developed countries, even at that point. So this is, as it was said before, it's up to the needs.
Thank you. Let's have one more question from the floor, if we have any other journalists here present. Otherwise, I will close with a question that we are having online from a journalist from Germany. So, okay, last question. The outlook projects that prices for meat and the coarse grains that livestock eat will rise relatively to crop prices. Is this a potential help for food security as a staple food becomes cheaper? Or are farmers likely to focus on the more lucrative protein value chain?
I think that farmers are trying to compensate and looking for those products that give them better earnings. Mm? I think that's the change. But let me also combine with the last question. In the absence of economic growth, and also income growth, the only thing that can bring more demand for agriculture products is population growth. And we should not expect population growth in Europe, for example, or in North America. On the other side. But we can expect some economic growth in Asian countries. China is a good example. China is still growing at a high level. So we should expect on the, let's say, internal change that China is promoting on their agriculture policy, a huge impact on the world economic prices. You know that China is looking for applying autosufficient also, not only for maize that they already achieved, but for other commodities that they are still importing, dairy products, for example. This can affect hugely. Not only China, there are other countries that are looking for increasing their domestic production to depend less on imports. So this will depend on the policies to be effective, because the outlook does not consider this policy change that can affect the prices. For the moment, what we can say is that we don't see a big increase on the consumption side, even for meat, because there is no strong economic growth. That's the point. And in the absence of that, we rely only on the population growth. And this can only happen on African countries, for example, or low-income countries in general. And this will affect mainly the crops, basically commodity, staple food, rice, and so on. And that is one of the reasons that we can see nowadays, 2016, that rice is rice prices are up compared with other commodities that the price are down.
Thank you. Unless there are any further questions from the podium.
I perhaps wanted to ask our friends of FAO, how do they see the evolution here? We have a number of you mentioned that we are working together on a number of areas, when, including some policy areas that we're going to be addressing. Which are the ones that you believe are the most crucial? Where is it on the pricing side? Is it on the subsidy side? I go back to this because we said 600 billion. Now, 600 billion is more than we spend today on subsidies for fossil fuels. Now, we have always denounced the subsidies to fossil fuels as waste, because first of all, it encourages more consumption of something we don't want to consume because it emits pollution. Second, because it is regressive socially. And third, because it's terrible for the budgets at the time when we need to reallocate the resources, etc. But here, with these 600 billion, how do you, from a policy point of view, how do you see this moving or evolving? There are enormously delicate political issues, social issues, real needs, very poor people involved, etc. So it's not just a question of efficiency and productivity. But one intuitively also says 600 billion. My God, we can do a lot of stuff with 600 billion. If you don't save any money, you know, just reallocating or allocating those resources, even to the same sector, to the same people. Eh?
Well, we are entering an area of policy choice, what is not only some kind of a scientific approach, but yeah. I think that after Nairobi, there is a, let's say, a hope that we will really go in direction to cut export subsidies for agriculture products. I think this is a hope now that is back again. And this opened doors of for a lot of domestic policies. One policy that have been proven not only in India, that is the traditional, but also in West Africa, is their stock, emergency stocks, to face unexpected impacts of climate change, for example, draw, floods, and so on. So this is a policy that you can see. Another one is the substitute of imports, like the what we had on the old times in the import substitution, things that you can grow domestically and not import them, and make some change on the consumption preference, was using propaganda and other things. This is also being put in place by several governments are reducing, for example, imports of wheat and growing local production of corn, cassava, other roots that are produced in most of developing countries. But what I think that is most important is that there is now lots of experience showing that better than subsidized products or inputs, like fertilizer, for example, it's better to give the money for the poor. So cash transfer programs have been proven to be much more efficient for food security and also not distorting the allocation, prices allocation. So you give the money, if we could give this 6 billion to the poor, probably we will not have any more unnourished people around the world, just to say a big number.
Thank you. With these comments, I think we are going to close down this event today. Thank you, everybody, for attending, and especially our two heads of the institutions for being here with us today. Thank you very much.